Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we have lots to talk about on today's program. 888-302-3684 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation, and we'll be talking probiotics. We'll be talking about melatonin for breast cancer. And before we get to your phone calls, recently, you know, in the studio, we have a TV monitor. And so sometimes while talking, I glance at the TV monitor. And we, in the last hour, we saw the extraordinary spectacle on cable news of, remember the slow chase in the white Bronco with O.J. Simpson? Well, it almost looked like that. It was a white ambulance that was leaving Atlanta Airport on its way to Emory University Hospital with one or both of the American Ebola victims who had been Ebola victims who were airlifted to the United States for care. And it looked like this individual walked on his or her own power from the ambulance with assistance, wearing a spacesuit. You know, literally, it looked like the walk on the moon, the moonwalk, with a high security suit, completely airtight, and with all kinds of infection precautions, walking into Emory University Hospital on their own. And so, you know, some people say, what in the heck are you doing here? Are you inviting a zombie apocalypse upon America? How do they authorize this? Is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? What's going on over there? Are we all going to end up like in the movies, you know, bleeding zombies, bleeding from all their orifices? Because Ebola virus is a hemorrhagic fever, which results in breakdown of the blood vessels and capillaries in its end stages, where blood literally can gush from any orifice of the body. It's a terrible, terrible fate. And the fatality rate in Africa is astounding. It's 70 to 90%, depending on the degree of care. It's almost like there's virtually nothing you can do for it. There's no specific treatment. It's more supportive treatment. Patients are getting hydration, and they're getting some light medication, but the toll is terrible, and it's a big mess over there because this is the worst Ebola outbreak so far. And also, it's complicated by the fact that health workers are getting sick. That's how the Americans got sick. They were health workers. And you should see, I mean, you probably have seen pictures of them putting on their goggles and their heavy spacesuits and their gloves and their booties. And still, how do they get exposed to this? Well, I think part of it is the conditions under which they were working. Because, this morning I went to the gym and I worked out. And then I sat in the steam room. And as I sat in the steam room, and after about 10, 15 minutes, it was getting unbearable. And then I thought, well, what if I was wearing one of those crazy suits and at the same time, under conditions of high heat and humidity, you know, 100 degrees and 90% humidity, I was trying to work on, patients in agony with all kinds of infectious body fluids. It's got to be really tough to work under those circumstances. And if you make a little mistake, if you, say, nick one of your gloves, or if you take off a glove prematurely, if you don't use a perfect sterile procedure, you might get exposed to this. Well, is this going to become a widespread, worldwide scourge? And the answer, in my opinion, the opinion of a lot of experts, is no, for several reasons. One is that this is a disease which is most infectious in its later stages. So when it's infectious, it's pretty obvious that you're sick. Now, diseases that are most successful in causing worldwide epidemics, like SARS and the flu and the bubonic plague, are transferred pneumonically. They're transferred via aerosolized droplets. You know, when you cough or sneeze or when you touch a surface and it's invisible. And the people who transmit the disease often are not aware that they have the disease. They may feel a little malaise, but just like the cold and the flu, You know, you sit in a subway car and an ostensibly well person, or in a plane, an ostensibly well person coughs, or say tuberculosis, then it can be transmitted via the air, and you inhale it and you get it. And in this case, as long as you don't touch infected body fluids, you're not going to get it. That is, unless by some horrible mutation, the virus becomes transmissible via aerosolized droplets. I mean, it's a possibility. With any kind of virus, they sometimes modify their survival methods, their rapidly evolving species. But AIDS is another example of something that's pretty insidious, because you can be sort of okay, feel a little under the weather, and then have sex with someone you transmit it to them. Or, you know, you give blood. You say, well, I'm okay. You give blood, boom, blood transfusion. Gives AIDS to someone who is an innocent recipient of that. That's how AIDS exploded across the world. This is very unlikely to explode. And by its very virulence, by the fact that it is so severe, it's going to fail. It is an evolutionary failure, because it makes people too sick and they die too quickly and dramatically and obviously for it to become an insidious virus that spreads globally. And is it a good idea to bring Americans to back to our country for treatment? And the answer is, I think it's okay, because they have very, very carefully evaluated the suitability of Emory University Hospital to undertake infectious precautions. And this is not like the field in Africa. This is where they have negative pressure chambers in the plane. They had an amazing setup. They had a negative pressure literally like a hospital room within the transport plane, negative pressure, which means it pulls stuff in rather than pushes stuff out. And people in special suits ministered to the patient. And that's the way it's going to be at Emory University Hospital. I think it's a good thing, because, A, it'll increase the likelihood of survival of these two American individuals, who actually seem to be moving in the right direction. Because if you can walk on your own power out of the ambulance into the hospital, that's a good sign. But also it'll afford an opportunity to undertake necessary research, which cannot be undertaken in the field. You know, crazy conditions exist in Africa. They're rioting there. They're trying to attack some of the hospitals because they think the doctors there are guilty of spreading the virus. The ignorance there is so pervasive that they think that traditional medical practices like witch doctors are the right way to go. And they see people dying going into these hospitals, so they're attacking the doctors, attacking the hospitals. It's not a good scene. They also have traditional practices there where they want to take the body of the deceased and clean it up and bathe it. And that's exactly the wrong thing to do. So they're saying, well, how are these terrible Western doctors telling us that we can't reclaim the body of our relative do the proper burial ablutions that our religious beliefs require? And no, it's just not a good idea to touch the body unless you're space-suited. So what about a nutritional perspective on this? Well, it's interesting. You know, one thing that happens when you have a high fever, they give you lots of Tylenol. And that's precisely the wrong thing to do when you're 4-plus sick, because Tylenol depletes glutathione. Many of these patients are nutritionally depleted to begin with. They may be on their way to scurvy. Scurvy is a disease that causes hemorrhages in the body. It causes the teeth to fall out, the gums to bleed, little tiny hemorrhages form under the skin when you have scurvy. And many of these people may be poorly nourished to begin with. Also, when they give these individuals antibiotics, well, it's a mistake to give antibiotics to someone with a virus, but they thought, well, we'll try. That can deplete the vitamin K in their intestinal tract. Made by bacteria. You deplete the bacteria, you deplete vitamin K, and that will cause worsening hemorrhage, because vitamin K prevents extensive bleeding. And, oh, by the way, many of these people are low in nutrients like selenium, vitamin A, and zinc, so their chances of survival are much less in Africa than they might be if this disease were to come to the United States. And I'm pulling up research from late last year. HIV progression delayed with micronutrients and multivitamins. Now, we're not saying that HIV can be cured by merely taking some supplements, but new research, this is from Botswana. Researchers looked at 878 patients from Botswana, and they received daily multivitamins for a period of 24 months. And what they found is that although, you know, it didn't cure them, their progression to full-blown AIDS was slowed. And this can be particularly important in a research or a resource-poor country where they don't have a lot of medications. Multivitamins are pretty cheap, and with or without the medications, you're going to slow the progression of the disease. And so it'll be very interesting if they undertake studies down in Atlanta of the effects of nutrient support on people who are exposed to this virus. I think that's going to be an important component of how to stem the tide of this deadly epidemic. Ultimately, I do not think that we need to worry that the zombie apocalypse is upon us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We'll be back to take some of your phone calls. Lots more information available on today's edition of Intelligent Medicine.
If you're like me, balancing my blood sugar is important to me for my health and wellness, especially as I get older. I pay attention to what I eat and try to exercise daily, but even that might not be enough. So each day I take Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance in conjunction with a healthy diet, regular exercise, and plenty of rest. Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is my trusted ally for healthy weight management, overall cardiovascular health, and immune function. Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is a synergistic combination of odorless kyolic aged garlic extract and herbs and nutrients shown to help maintain blood sugar levels. And it's made by our friends at Kyolic, the number one best-selling odorless garlic supplement on the market for over 40 years. So join the Kyolic team. I did.
Kyolic Blood Sugar Balance is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, 888-302-3684. We're answering your questions. Let's talk to Lydia. Hi, Lydia.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for taking for my call. Long-time listener. I have two quick questions. I'm 53 years old and in good health. Recently, I got checked my eye and developing a cataract.
Cataracts, yep.
It's getting worse, so... I don't know. I need your opinion that there are supplements or do I have to go to surgery?
Okay. So let's tackle that question first. Look, I got to say that once you've developed cataracts, you know, despite claims by some people that there's some kind of miracle cataract dissolving substance, you know, like a vitamin or some eye drop, I don't think the cataracts can literally be reversed. I've seen a different situation with macular degeneration. I think you can actually improve macular degeneration with certain eye supplements. But cataracts, it's a little bit like what's happening in the eye is a little bit like what happens when you take the clear egg white and you put it in a hot pan and it turns white. It opacifies. It goes from transparent to opaque. And this is the result of the cross-linking of proteins that occur with free radicals and the aging process and glycosylation. And these are processes that damage the proteins and cause them to become cloudy. And as a result, you know, it's very hard to reverse those. Once those bonds have been formed, it's hard to reverse that. However, I think you can slow the progression by using some of the same things that you use for macular degeneration. Antioxidants can make a difference. I think that taking especially vitamin E and C and zinc and selenium and glutathione or N-acetylcysteine, I think that these have, you know, great antioxidant potential. Plus some of the nutrients that we know have antioxidant effects, like resveratrol or pycnogenol. These are things that potentially could slow the progression. But, you know, once you have visual problems, you know, it's time to get your cataracts operated on. You know, this is 2014, cataract surgery, relatively easy, although any surgery has the potential for complications. But you can get it done. You'll be seeing fine. It's not mm-hmm. that hard to do, and, you know, you shouldn't hold out too long and, you know, have your life interfered with at a young age. And your second question?
Second question. My niece traveled to Africa last year.
Oh, that's not good. That is not good.
Yeah. So, yeah, right.
Don't tell me. No, she's not one of those people who got Ebola.
Yeah, so no, actually, yeah, no. But so the doctor recently said she didn't know she should travel to Africa. She told her by looking her skin, I think she tested. She's tested to TB. She, you know, contacted.
She was exposed. Yeah, she was exposed to TB, so she has a positive skin test. Okay, so now
exactly.
So we don't know what to do now, right?
Her X-ray shows negative. So the doctor insists she has to go to this 9 months treatment.
Yeah. So let me address that, because the TB is one of these things where, you know, this is a medical dilemma, because if you've been exposed to TB, you might have a positive skin test. And as a result, we don't know if TB is going to develop in your case or not. It doesn't develop in everyone who's been exposed to TB, but they insist on antibiotic prophylaxis, number one, for your sake, but also for the sake of the overall population of this country and for our health security, that people who have been exposed to TB, they may be carriers of TB, even though it doesn't show up in an X-ray. And you got to go through this whole rigmarole of treatment, and unfortunately that involves multiple antibiotics for a long period of time. So what do you do? What can you do to support treatment of TB? Well, you can take vitamin D, because vitamin D appears to support the treatment of TB. Also, some of the medications used for treatment of TB deplete vitamin B6. So you'll be asked to take, even the conventional doctors recognize this, they'll tell you to take pyridoxin or vitamin B6 when you take certain of these medications. Unfortunately, it's one of these things you got to go through. I can't say, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. It's a positive skin test. You probably won't get TB. Well, you probably won't, but you might. And that's a terrible thing. So maybe you have to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Let's talk now to Chris. Welcome. Chris is from Bronx, New York. Hi, Chris.
Hello, doctor.
Yeah.
Yes. I have a question about my mother. She's being treated for MAC, Mycenaeum Avium Complex.
Yeah, Mycobacterium avium, yeah.
Mycobacterium, excuse me.
Right.
And she had the standard treatment. I don't think you want to hear about the antibiotics.
You know, it's actually very similar to the previous call, because MAC or M avium complex is it's tuberculosis related. And so you're going to take multiple antibiotics for that. This is a problem that occurs in older people whose immunity is suppressed. It's not as bad as TB, but it can damage the lungs. And, you know, the same applies to M. avium as it does to regular TB. Is vitamin D very helpful? So I'd recommend that you get her levels checked, make sure that we optimize. Taking up to 5,000 international units would not be harmful in most cases, but do follow the levels. And take other supportive nutrients that support the immune system. This is a little bit like my discussion in the beginning of the show about Ebola, is that, yes, you want to take zinc and vitamin C and selenium. And some of my patients who have serious chronic diseases, you know, chronic hepatitis or, you know, mononucleosis or M. avium, we give them high doses of intravenous vitamin C, because IV vitamin C is very helpful for alleviating many types of infectious diseases. And we recommend it as an adjunct. You know, this is not going to be a 100% cure, but, you know, it's on your own immune system that should be fighting this stuff off. And if you're immune suppressed, you need some additional boost. So things like AHCC, Empower, Transfer Factor, these also may come into play in supporting the treatment of MAC. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. When we return, a remarkable study on the relationship between melatonin, darkness, and breast cancer. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Taking an omega-3 has become part of my daily routine, but I did have some concerns about the environment and, quite frankly, the occasional fishy burp back. So I looked around and discovered a new eco-friendly and vegetarian alternative to fish oil, Chia Omega. While it's no secret growing older can be a challenge, my doctor stresses the importance of omega-3s in helping to achieve and maintain a healthy lifestyle throughout all the stages of my life. I discovered that many health experts encourage supplementation with omega-3s to help support cardiovascular health, joint comfort, and healthy cognition. Chia Omega is a high-quality, all-natural, plant-based line of supplements made from chia seed oil. Chia seeds are the richest and most sustainable natural sources of ALA omega-3 on the planet, containing even more than fish or flax. Having choices concerning my health and making a conscientious change benefiting the environment feels empowering. That's why I switched to Chia Omega. You can get essential formulas Chia Omega at Vitamin Shoppe and other fine health food stores everywhere.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. All right, lyrics from a Jim Morrison song of the 60s. Turn out the lights, turn out the lights. It turns out that total darkness at night may be the key to success of certain breast cancer therapies. That is really bizarre. But think about it. How many of you have total blackout darkness at night in your bedroom, even as you sleep with your eyes closed? Your body may be bathed in light. And incredible as it may seem, that may affect the outcome of your breast cancer therapy. This is wild stuff. Exposure to light at night. I'm reading from Science Daily, July 25th. The source is Tulane University. And by the way, we post references to the articles that we share with you at drhoffman.com. So if you want to learn more, check out drhoffman.com a little later in the week, because it takes us a while to post these links. Exposure to light at night, which shuts off nighttime production of melatonin, renders breast cancer completely resistant to the popular breast cancer drug tamoxifen. How many of you women out there have had breast cancer and then you've had surgery and you've been told to go on tamoxifen? Well, if you didn't have total darkness in your bedroom, the tamoxifen was rendered completely inactive. That's incredible stuff. In this study, they kept animals in a daily light-dark cycle of 12 hours of light followed by 12 hours of total darkness. And these were animals in whom were implanted human breast cancer cells. Melatonin by itself delayed the formation of tumors. So they gave these animals melatonin, and it worked to delay the formation of tumors. And it significantly slowed their growth. But the addition of tamoxifen caused a dramatic regression of tumors. And the problem was that if you turned on the lights, if they were exposed to any light whatsoever, it completely neutralized the benefits of the tamoxifen. The good news is that adding melatonin offset the suppression of the effects of tamoxifen, but not completely. The best combo was to sleep in the dark and to take melatonin and to take tamoxifen concurrently, because it appears that high melatonin levels at night, by the way, melatonin is produced in complete darkness. And when there's any light, it abolishes melatonin. So you can generate melatonin by being truly in the dark. And there's so much light pollution now that very few of us are in the total dark anymore at night, like our primitive ancestors. High melatonin levels at night, whether generated by darkness or whether generated by taking melatonin, put breast cancer cells to sleep. And these cells are vulnerable to tamoxifen, but when the lights are on and melatonin is suppressed, breast cancer cells wake up and ignore the tamoxifen. So this is wild stuff. And other studies previously have shown that melatonin has the potential to slow tumor growth in certain breast cancers, not all, but it has a lot of potential for not just breast cancer, but many cancers. Mice treated with melatonin showed significantly smaller tumors after 21 days. In the control group that did not receive melatonin in the study, their tumor volume increased significantly. And plus, there was less growth of blood vessels in the tumors of the group that got melatonin. It has an anti-angiogenic effect. Angiogenesis is one of the means by which cancer cells implant and form metastases. And these results suggest that melatonin has the potential as a therapeutic agent for breast cancer. We use it all the time. We use high-dose melatonin, 20 milligrams nightly. And you might think, oh, my God, that'd be like taking too much of a sleeping pill. You'd never get up in the morning. No. There's a threshold of action of melatonin. It helps you sleep, but taking very high doses of melatonin usually doesn't disturb people or make them groggy or over-sedated, and can be very beneficial in support of treatment of breast cancer. In this case, particularly when tamoxifen is being used for prevention of the recurrence of cancer. So amazing, amazing reports. Let's talk to Christina. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Christina.
Yes, hi. I'm Dr. Hoffman. I have asked this question, I think, last week, but I don't think I got the... I didn't give you the proper problem that I have. I have too much protein in my kidney, so I'm urinating.
Yeah, could you speak a little closer to the phone?
Sorry. Can you hear me better now?
Oh, perfect. Yeah,
oh,
I hate the speakerphone. Hey, anybody with a speakerphone? Oh, get rid of that speakerphone. It's horrible. Nobody wants to listen to somebody on speakerphone.
Sorry about that.
Unless you're paralyzed. I mean, if you're paralyzed, yeah, talk to me on your speakerphone.
Okay.
But you're not paralyzed.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
So I have too much protein in my kidneys. So
protein in your, it's actually in your urine. That's the way it shows up.
Oh, so, yeah. Oh, okay. And I'm urinating like every hour, every couple, you know, hour and a half or so. And it's
so
pretty,
what's the diagnosis? What are the doctors saying you have?
They don't know. They're just saying that it's too much protein in the kidneys, but what am I supposed to do at this point?
First you need a diagnosis. And did the doctors do a kidney biopsy to see what was happening?
No, he didn't do a kidney biopsy, yeah.
Do they plan to do a kidney biopsy?
I don't know. I would have to talk to him further.
Okay. You mean there's some lapse in the communication between you and your doctor because you don't know what to do. You call the show, and I don't even know the facts. So do you have high blood pressure?
Yeah.
Do you have diabetes?
Diabetes, yeah.
You have high blood sugar. Okay, so that's the major cause of protein in the urine or proteinuria. And actually, they use a test called microalbumin to evaluate the sufficiency of your control of diabetes and hypertension. So I see this a lot, and I do that test, and I look for protein in the urine. It's a really nice test for finding out if your blood pressure needs to be better controlled or if your diabetes is not adequately controlled. And when you respond to treatment, whether it's the right medication, in conjunction with the right kind of diet, the protein will be reduced and ultimately it'll disappear because the stress in your kidney is coming from the high blood sugar and the high blood pressure. Those two things have an erosive effect on the kidney, damage the kidney, cause the kidney to leak, lose protein. And what are you been told about the right kind of diet to follow? Or
yeah, but I lost weight, quite a considerable amount of
which
weight.
Which is good. Good.
Yeah,
okay,
which is good. So that's I'm on the right. So my diabetes level has gone down, but I don't know if it's enough to go down to make me
well,
stop
that,
going.
That should help. That absolutely should help. So, you know, right kind of diet, you know, check out the salad and salmon diet on our website. There's no need, in my opinion, to go on an ultra-low protein diet, as is sometimes suggested for people with kidney problems, because, you know, then you end up substituting a lot of carbs, which is bad for the diabetes. You need the right kind of medicines. Sometimes ACE inhibitors are used to protect the kidneys. But I'm not a big fan of the diabetes medications. You really need to control your diabetes with, you know, less in the way of refined carbohydrates. You need to eat some low glycemic index carbohydrates and some protein. And fish oil helps to protect the kidneys. Also, some studies suggest that alpha-lipoic acid has a good effect on damaged kidneys. So these are some things you can take. Vitamin D may also have a good effect, certainly on blood pressure. And it does have an effect on diabetes. And when we return, we're going to talk about another natural treatment for high blood pressure, something that you never saw coming. It's something that many of us take, and it can be beneficial for high blood pressure. So stay tuned. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
drhoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. All right, that last caller was talking about diabetes combined with high blood pressure damaging the kidneys. We use microalbumin as a way of determining whether blood pressure is adequately controlled, because the kidneys will leak protein if you have poorly controlled blood sugar or blood pressure. Here is a remarkable new perspective on how you can lower your blood pressure with something that many of us take. Probiotics may reduce blood pressure. Who'd have thunk it? This is in the Times. Nicholas Bacalar reports that consuming probiotics has a small but significant effect in lowering blood pressure. They looked at 9 trials with a large number of participants, and what they found is that 8 of the 9 studies found reductions in blood pressure. On average, blood pressure declined by about 4 points. That's the systolic. That's the first number. And diastolic by about 2.5 points. That didn't sound like much, but, you know, every little bit of blood pressure control can help, and combined with such agents as aged garlic extract and fish oil and vitamin D and magnesium, you could get significant reduction of your blood pressure, right? The analysis was published in the journal Hypertension. And wait, folks, there's more. Here's something from clinicaltrials.gov. Can probiotics be used in the prevention of recurrent UTIs in kids who suffer from bladder problems? You know, there are a lot of kids who have something called VSU, vesicular vesicular urethral reflux, or VUR. These acronyms sometimes get confusing. So what they found was that they're actually doing a trial. This is not yet proven, but they've already demonstrated that daily probiotics given to women prone to urinary tract infections, either orally or in vaginal suppositories, can prevent urinary tract infections. So now they've got a big study going on looking at kids who are prone to bladder infections using probiotics. And, oh, by the way, what are they doing at my alma mater, Albert Einstein College of Medicine, up there in the Bronx? They are zeroing in on the right kind of probiotics that can be used to suppress colitis. Also, colitis and Crohn's disease are inflammatory conditions of the gastrointestinal tract. And researchers know that the proper bacteria intestinally may influence or reduce the likelihood of ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, help heal the intestinal mucosa. So a couple of researchers up there, Dr. Sridhar Mani, who's a professor of medicine genetics, is looking at specific types of bacteria that manufacture something called indole-3 propionic acid, which is a metabolite of bacteria, and the release of IPA, or indole-3 propionic acid, has an anti-inflammatory effect on the intestine. Certain strains of bacteria make IPA. So this is cool. Dr. Manny's team is now developing novel probiotics that are specifically targeted at inflammatory bowel disease by restoring the intestinal epithelium's barrier function. So great work is underway. I mean, lots of over-the-counter probiotics help, but these are in the future we'll see targeted probiotics that are specifically engineered to treat various diseases, perhaps high blood pressure, diabetes, urinary tract infections, and gastrointestinal problems like constipation and even inflammatory bowel disease. Cool stuff. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Through the miracle of modern instantaneous communication and social media, I'm reading my Facebook page, and I get a comment from Karen, who writes, Dr. Hoffman, just listened to you discussing melatonin in relationship to breast cancer treatment. I called you in 1997 when I was just diagnosed with sarcoidosis. You suggested large doses of melatonin, and my symptoms went away, and I got off prednisone. The disease never came back. Thanks. Really appreciate you. And thanks, Karen. I'm glad to hear that you had a good result. That's very exciting. All right, let's talk now to Richard up in Connecticut. Welcome.
Hi, Dr. Richard. Hoffman. Yes, I'm here. I have a question about mercury and specifically how one would know if they actually had a toxicity or you know, a heavy metal poisoning. What would be the testing, please?
Well, you know, mercury is one of those things where you might be hypersensitive to mercury, so just levels alone is not enough. But we do test levels through the blood, but that can sometimes give you sort of false reassurance, oh, there's not that much, but a person might be hypersensitive to the small amounts they have. The best test, in my opinion, is a provocative chelation, where we actually give patients a medication. We test them first without the medication, then we test them after, and we see how much additional mercury is provoked to be excreted from the kidneys. And we see very, very high spillage. It suggests that there's a lot to chelate out. And then we will give patients additional chelation usually I prefer to use something called DMSA along with N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, selenium as part of a detoxification program. And, you know, the symptoms are very, very varied. You can have fatigue. You can have autoimmunity. It's thought that it contributes to a risk of autism. And so there's a lot of problems that mercury can cause. So we use the provoked chelation test to see if there are high levels. And we also check for cadmium and lead. These are big problems as well. All right. Thanks very much for joining us. And remember, you can get lots more information. If you missed the first hour of the program, check us out on Monday because we will put up the entire two-hour podcast and also lots of great information at drhoffman.com, podcasts on a daily basis, Q&A with Layla. Last week we tackled the marijuana question and we talked about the safety and effectiveness of multivitamins with a great guest, Dr. Baltz Fry. So check out all the resources that we have there, plus references to the articles that we share with you, all available at drhoffman.com. Thanks for joining us. Have yourselves a great weekend. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.